be to order, and when I say members, I mean the four of us, the five of us, sorry, Representative Hillstrom. And I think what we'll do is get going with Representative Andersonville, since you're here and ready, and we should have a quorum by the time you're done. Representative Anderson, you must be good. It got really quiet in here. Representative Anderson, to your bill whenever you're ready to proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What this bill does is it allows for pond facilities to have the redemption period limited just to the 60-day hold. This is 60-day hold was put in place to allow for law enforcement to get the information that they need for APS. And so that retains that. It just says that if you were to come in and make a partial payment on your pond item, what happens then is there's a 60-day additional trigger. So then instead of just being 60 days, then it becomes, 105 days. Say you came in on day 45, that triggers another 60-day hold, which makes it 105 days total. And so it just eliminates that additional time frame. And so that's all this bill does, and I know I'll leave it at that. I'll try to provide as brief a testimony as possible for you, Mr. Chair, out of respect for your time.
Representative Anderson, thank you, and we hope that thought continues as we go through the day here, since we have a rather aggressive agenda. We are two members short of a quorum, I think. Is there anybody in the audience that would like to speak sort of slowly for or against this bill? Representative Hillstrom, do you have any questions for the author of the bill? Any weekend plans that you'd like to share with the crowd?
Your hair looks great, by the way.
Mr. Chair and members, it's my understanding from talking with the industry that they have reached out to law enforcement on this issue and that they don't have a concern about the proposal. So at this point, I think the proposal is non-controversial, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Hillstrom. And Representative Anderson, I think what we'll do, since we're just slightly short of quorum, is have you sit down and we'll move on to Representative Baker's bill, and we'll come back to yours and talk about it and then pass it when we've got folks here.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you, Representative Anderson, and thank you, Representative Hillstrom. Representative Baker, I thought I saw Representative Baker. Here he comes.
Good job, Sarah.
We're not moving because we don't have a quorum, but we're going to be discussing Representative Baker's House File 805.
We do now.
We now have a quorum. Representative Baker, welcome to the committee. Representative Anderson, unless you need to run to your committee, we'll have you come back right after Representative Baker. Representative Baker, I will move House File 805, and I can't remember if we have an amendment. I assume the DE1 is an author's amendment?
Yes, it is, Mr. Chair.
I will also move the DE1 amendment to get the bill in the shape the author would like it to be in. Those in favor of the adoption of the DE1 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Baker, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I bring to you what I've been working with is called the water conditioning bill that really is a really good small business and a common sense homeowner's bill that helps us in small business as I am to use reasonable decisions when it comes to replacing like a water softener. Again, I own a restaurant. It's a fabulous restaurant, by the way, out in western Minnesota. I don't know if I ever mentioned that. But it's one where once in a while...
Representative Baker, typically when people brag about the quality of their restaurant, they bring samples.
Usually
I don't
week.
See those.
I will work on that, Mr. Chair.
All right. I
Thank
expect
you.
To see them next week. Thank you. To your bill, my apologies for the interruption.
No problems. And... once in a while, the dishwasher might go out on a Thursday night, Friday night, and I have a great relationship with our company that we use, Ecolab, for example. And we have 24-hour service. We give them a call. They're there as fast as they can. And sometimes we can't replace that without some serious plumbing issues that come along. So for us, to do that kind of work, it has become very cumbersome. So what this bill really does, folks, and we've really got some of the trades here today. We've got some good compromise. I think we've got a good bill here that makes it okay for a water softener trained person to be able to replace a water softener in an existing home when we've got the safety nets set up for our trades to make sure that this is still safe and it's not going to be extending what they should be doing as licensed installers. And so I think this is just a real good common sense bill, folks. And again, I've got Mr. Haas with me today, Mr. Chair, and I'll let him go through the bill real quickly. And we've got some other testifiers. Thank you,
Representative Baker. Mr. Haas, welcome to the committee. Please proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Mark Hosey, and I represent the Minnesota Water Quality Association, an association of water quality improvement businesses located throughout Minnesota. Just a quick description of the bill. Under current statutes, licensed water conditioning masters and journeymen cannot install water conditioning equipment in any commercial settings, even though the statutes require them to be trained in the water issues, treatment, and equipment involved. House File 805, as amended, will allow them to install equipment in small commercial settings only when a readily available valve installed by a licensed plumber isolates the water conditioning installation from the plumbing system. That change is made in Section 2 of the bill. Sections 3, 4, and 7 just clarify how someone can become licensed in water conditioning. Current law does not explicitly provide a way for them to gain the required practical experience. The other sections of the bill are essentially technical changes. I'd now like to introduce the legislative chair of MWQA, Mr. Jeff Hill. He's a second-generation owner of Robert Hill Company, a water conditioning company in St. Louis Park. He has a degree in chemistry. He's a water conditioning master and has other relevant certifications. You'll have brief comments here.
Thank you, Mr. Hosey. Mr. Hill, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself to the tape and proceed with your comments.
Thank you. I'm Jeffrey Hill, Mr. Chairman. Thanks, and members of the committee. Thanks for allowing me to speak. Minnesota has one of the strongest water technology sectors in the nation. We export over $700 million in products and employ 16,000 people. Pentair, Dow Membranes, GE's reverse osmosis plant, EchoWater and Ecolab all have significant facilities here. And this technology is addressing the growing needs of drinking water around the world. But here in Minnesota, water conditioning contractors bring this technology to our homes, institutions, and businesses. We're here to respond to needs for drinking water safety. And that's particularly true in rural areas where there are fewer centralized water systems. And you may know of this need in your home or your businesses. But not only do you want soft water, you and your family may want protection from nitrates, VOCs, volatile organic compounds, arsenic, radium. And we have the expertise to do this. Our members and our association have strong training programs. The Department of Labor and Industry licenses our people as water conditioning journeymen and water conditioning masters, and my business is licensed by DLI as a water conditioning contractor. And you, the legislator, added formal continuing education a few years ago. So taken together, this has helped us to develop a trained workforce. But we need a DLI registry for our training employees, and House File 805 addresses this. And we've been hampered in our ability to make piping connections in small commercial applications, and 805 addresses this. We do have the expertise to do this work safely, and we bring the added benefit of specializing in this technology. Now, plumbers are our partners in every setting, so I'm happy that we've been able to work with the pipe trades and the mechanical contractors associations to develop this legislation. For I now know that legislating is arduous work. Who knew? But 3 years of work with the Department of Labor and Industry have built strong bonds with them and shared knowledge, and it's benefited us greatly, and we think it's benefited the Department of Labor and Industry as well. And it'll benefit consumers. So we're grateful to Representative Baker and the eight House co-authors of our bill and those who helped us in the previous 2 years. Plumbing is public health, and the passage of this bill reminds us of our responsibility. The Minnesota Water Quality pledges to continue the work to protect public health and to protect consumer value. Thank you for your time. I'm glad to take any questions that anyone might have.
Thank you, Mr. Hill. Mr. Thaden?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Gary Thaden. I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Minnesota Mechanical Contractors Association. We're 135 plumbing and heating contractors who work throughout the state of Minnesota. We think this quality bill by the Water Quality Association is a good bill, and we support it.
Thank you, Mr. Thaden. Representative Swidzinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick comment. Just to thank, this is a good bill. I want to remind the committee that Emmett Culligan, who invented Culligan Water Systems, was actually invented in Porter, Minnesota, which is a little town of a couple hundred people in my district and only 2 miles away from my home. So, on the.
So that makes you then the Culligan man. Never mind, don't answer. Mr. DeLaForest, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, good afternoon. For the record, Chris DeLaForest today here on behalf of the Minnesota Pipe Trades Association, joined by David Ibarra, who's in the audience, who's the president of the Minnesota Pipe Trades Association. Pipe Trades Association is pleased to be a part of the compromise that resulted in the DE amendment you see before you. Mr. Chairman, Representative Davids, we have peace in the valley.
Thank you, Representative, Mr. DeLaForest. Members, any questions? Is there anyone else in the audience that wants to speak for or against the bill? Representative Baker, we'll give you the final word. And Mr. Hill, thank you. Gentlemen, nice job testifying, and we always appreciate the recognition of the legislators' hard work. In the private sector, they call that sucking up. Here, we just call it the honest plain truth. Representative Baker, to your bill.
Nope, Mr. Chair, members, this was great collaborations. We brought the folks together. We said we're going to do this and do it right, and I'm grateful for everybody coming together to make this bill better, so I really appreciate your support.
Representative Baker, thank you. And in all seriousness, this is what we like in the Commerce Committee, where people get their differences worked out. I know this took a long time, and I do appreciate the folks on all sides of the issue coming together and compromising on this. With that, I will renew my motion that House File 805, as amended, be referred to the Committee on Jobs. Those in favor of that motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, members. Thank you, Representative Baker. With that,
thank you.
Representative Anderson, you already presented your bill. If you just want to stay there, I think we can go ahead. We already heard the bill. It wasn't officially before us. If you want to go ahead and move 1764 to the General Register.
So moved, Mr. Chair. Yes, please.
And I asked this before, and I don't think anyone came down, but is there anyone that wants to speak for or against House File 1764? Not seeing anyone. Any member questions? Not seeing any. With that, Representative Anderson renews her motion that House File 1764 be re-referred to the General Register. All those in favor of this motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, members. Thank you, Representative Anderson. Representative Franzen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So the treats going around is compliments of my 40th birthday, so enjoy.
Representative Franzen, thank you. Happy birthday, Representative Franzen.
I do approve the minutes, Mr.
We always let people do that on their 40th birthday. Members, any questions, comments, or concerns about the minutes from yesterday's meeting? Not seen any. Representative Franzen, it moves the adoption of the minutes from yesterday. Those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. The minutes from yesterday are adopted. Thank you, and happy birthday, Representative Franzen. Representative Dean, come on down. I will move House File 10. Well, Representative Dean, welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. I would request that House File 10 be re-referred to the Committee on Government Operations, and I do have an amendment.
Representative Dean, thank you. I moved House File 10. I will also move the A1 amendment to get the bill in the shape the author would like it to be. Those in favor of the adoption of the A1 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. The A1 amendment is adopted. Representative Dean, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This bill is, the House File 10 is identical to the bill that I presented 2 years ago, which is eliminates MNsure and moves Minnesota forward to the next step beyond MNsure. The amendment A1 that we put on recognizes some issues with market rules in the state of Minnesota that allows the market rules to be the distance and care be no different than the state rules are as this transition happens. This moves the federal exchange, as other states have done, particularly those states with the same vendor situation that we have with IBM Curum. In other states, as this has rolled out, obviously we don't need to relitigate or relive the events around why this is necessary for MNsure. This committee knows that probably better than others. I'm happy to answer questions about the necessity for that, but I also want to talk about something that relates from my committee, which deals with the financial viability and sustainability of MNsure going forward, and the reason for MNsure. In June of 2015, the Supreme Court said that Minnesota, after having set up a statewide exchange, really was told something that was not true by the federal government. We were told that if we set up a state exchange that we would have special tax benefits for Minnesotans as a result of engaging in a statewide exchange called MNsure. The Supreme Court in June of 2015 said that that's not the case, that we are no different than Wisconsin. So Wisconsin has exactly the same benefits that we have without the state-based exchange. So we were in a situation where we're saying, well, if we don't bring tax advantages to the state of Minnesota, we bring burdensome bureaucracy to the state of Minnesota and a lot of trouble for people trying to get and put their family on health insurance so that they can get to their providers in their areas. What exactly is this bringing to the table? So that's really the crux of the argument. What this will do is it will require Commerce in consultation with DHS and MNsure Board to develop and present 2018 legislature and implementation plan for converting Minnesota to a federally facilitated marketplace. This would be in place in January of 2019. And the reason for that is the last thing that we want to do is to put Minnesotans in another position where they have the rug pulled out from underneath of them. We want to make sure that Minnesotans who are on public programs who have to deal with MNsure don't have go through anything worse than they already have. We want to make sure that we have a sustainable program. So the arguments are the same that they were before, except now we have the Supreme Court saying that we don't have any special privileges as a state for doing so. But I really want to direct your attention to this page, which really looks at the funding of MNsure. And if you look at that, each fiscal year, from fiscal year 12 to fiscal year 19, and fiscal year 18 and 19 in this graph is the budget that was given to us by the governor. For that, you really have to look at the orange part of that graph. That is the federal subsidies that we are we're drawing down on to develop MNsure. And if this were to be true, number one, you'd have to believe that in 2019 that MNsure intends to spend less than half as much money as they're currently spending in their current budget. That seems to me to be a little bit unlikely, to say the least. I would also like to direct you to the salmon-colored portion of these graphs, which is the state appropriation, which we were told as a legislature when we voted on this that this would be self-sufficient without state subsidy. And as you can see from that, the state subsidy continues to grow and particularly the healthcare access fund, act as an overdraft account for MNsure as this moves forward, where we have MNsure essentially billing the Department of Human Services for any and all overhead that is not covered by, as you can see, a very much dwindling premium withhold. So that purple section is minuscule in comparison to what they said it would be. The salmon-colored portion is much larger than what they said it would be, obviously. And when we're looking forward as policymakers, you have to really ask yourself the question, how is this thing going to survive and is this sustainable? The answer that I have come to is that it is not sustainable financially, that fiscally we are going to be underwriting this through the Department of Human Services, the Healthcare Access Fund, and other sources of our general fund into the future. And but even if it did, even if it didn't cost money, and we are currently looking at $500 million in total spending, according to their budget that they have sent out, with build out and with overhead going into the next fiscal year, you have to really ask yourself, where are we going here? So that's what this bill does, and it's a very much a continuation of the discussion in the bill that we had last time. I can see that there is not less of an impetus for doing so. There's much more of an impetus for doing so, both federally, legally, as well as, I'm sure if you've talked to folks in your districts, you've heard the stories, you've heard the pleas of people trying to get their families enrolled, trying to solve problems, trying to get the medications that they need from the pharmacists that they are unable to get because of this, because of MNsure. So that's what the this bill does, and it tries to move Minnesota past MNsure and on to what's next. And I would look forward to the discussion with Commerce Committee of how to do that, and also recommendations for how to improve this bill moving forward. I think the likelihood of this passing is much higher than it was 2 years ago, so we want to make sure that we get it right. And as we move on to the upcoming committees, we want to take any and all recommendations to make it better. And with that, Mr. Chair, I would entertain any questions that you would have.
Thank you, Representative Dean. We do love works in progress here in the Commerce Committee. Representative Slocum has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is for Representative Dean. I'm not on a health care committee, so what I know about health care is what I've learned in other committees where bills have gone through. Could you speak to why the 30 members that included stakeholders, legislators, consumers, health plan representatives, and commissioners on the health care financing task force recommended that we stay with the federal exchange, the state exchange, my bad. And their reasoning was pretty specific, too, from what I understand, because of the lack of flexibility in administrating the different programs, the lack of control that we would have in Minnesota if we went to the federal program, and the cost. They felt this task force felt that the cost was going to be prohibitive also. I'm not on a health care committee, but that task force seemed to reflect the concerns of a bipartisan larger group with different people who were at the table.
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Slocum, first of all, I would invite you to rank very highly the healthcare committees on your next ranking sheet when you want to decide what committees you're on. We would love to have you on the Health and Human Services Committee. It'd be a great addition. Secondly, I did have an opportunity to be on that task force with folks from the industry, from legislators, and it was a very worthwhile experience. I can tell you that it did kind of take a direction where there was probably two minds of the committee to move in a couple of different directions. It certainly wasn't unanimity because both the recommendations by myself and others was that we discontinue our state-based exchange like other states. For example, Oregon, which was most similarly situated with us, going into state-based exchanges, immediately turned around. Hawaii has turned around. Other states that have exactly the same imprint as we did had the same kinds of legislatures that we do, not necessarily red states that have said, hey, we got to go in a different direction, so we want to turn the ship around. I think that there is a great deal more with a change in administration federally. I think that there's going to be less of a push in that direction and probably more of state-based solutions moving forward.
Representative Slocum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Dean, if the committee was so split, was there like a minority report? Was there if it was pretty well 50-50, or if it was truly the minority that wanted to stay or wanted to be with the federal, go to the federal exchange, and the majority, vast majority, wanted to stay with the state. You win some, you lose some. But if there truly was a 50-50 approximate split, was there a minority report in the committee or anything that reflected what you're telling me half the committee wanted?
Representative Dean.
Mr. Chair and Representative Slocum, as my recollection, as I recall, there was subgroups that that people broke into, the major group broke into subgroups, and each subgroup could offer up recommendations that the larger group could not then amend or change. It just was a simple majority vote. So it kind of broke into pieces, and one of them was move to the federal exchange, one of them was to grow what we have on the other end, and then there was like a clump of stuff in the middle. And that it was kind of a range of opinions within those three recommendations without clear unanimity on from the membership that I can tell you that, that I talked to.
Okay.
One more. Representative Slocum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, thank you. You're answering, and I think there should have been some kind of a minority report if there was going to be one. But I also just wanted to say I got people. My brother-in-law is running the camera over here for Channel 5.
This is an unfair advantage.
I noticed it's on you. Yeah.
How you doing? We have no rules in this. We have no rules in this committee, so I can introduce you.
No, that's not true. You bring the brother-in-law, you bring treats. We'll get those. Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Dean. First of all, Mr. Chair, are we going to are there people signed up to testify? Should I wait till we?
Well, if you want to ask questions, Representative Dean, go ahead. We have one other testifier signed up, and I was going to ask if there's others that want to speak.
I'll wait till after testifying.
Okay. Representative Hillstrom, okay. Becky Cole is the, come on up, join Representative Dean. Ms. Cole, thank you very much for coming. We appreciate it. Ms. Cole, you've sent us a number of emails on this subject, and we're happy that you're here. Welcome to the Commerce Committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed whenever you're ready.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, excuse me, thank you for letting me be here today. My name is Becky Cole, and I'm actually kind of representing myself here. I have an insurance license. I'm a broker, and I'm about to tell you about my adventure with Minsure. I love the idea of making insurance affordable and accessible to the public. By the way, this has been rolled out. Things really do have to change. And when I tell you my story here, I want you to hear the different holes that I have fallen into because of the infrastructure of how this was implemented. It starts a little over a year ago with the previous enrollment season. This is my adventure through the trails of Minsure. I had my license, but I didn't have any appointments with the carriers, so I thought working through an agency would be a good way to get my feet wet. I've been involved in the community for a really long time and different levels, and really seen that the need for people to become have accessible health insurance. And so I thought that would be a good way to get my feet wet and make a difference in the community. It was a learning experience for me, both good and bad, with that agency. They ended up cheating me out of the commissions that I had earned of doing the enrollments through the Minsure system. So I went to Minsure about this, and because all the work I did was through the Minsure website, in the very least I was hoping that they would have an issue about affiliating with an agency that had manipulative and deceptive business practices. Nope. They did an investigation and saw evidence in what I was saying and saw proof of people I had enrolled and those kinds of things. The board chair told me it was okay with them that I got cheated, and that was the end of the story with them. So again, I said I've been involved in the community, so I took it stepped back, took a breath, and I saw this as an inspiration to get my own appointments and move forward. MnSure's got a policy that you can't enroll unless you're affiliated with an agency. So I went and got my own agency license, and last August, I registered with MnSure with my own information, my own agency, did the certification process under my own information. Yet MnSure refused to acknowledge my new information. The only way they were going to let me enroll was unless I stayed affiliated with the organization that cheated me. I just couldn't get them to get it that I didn't want to work through that agency. I had new information. I had a new agency, and there was really no reason why I shouldn't be able to do this through my own agency. Merry-go-round on this lasted for 3 months. I wanted a new this is the year that they implemented the broker portal. The broker portals are associated with the agency. They kept putting my broker portal with the previous agency, and they wouldn't acknowledge my new information. Again, it took me 3 months to get them to get it. They decided they were going to, okay, they would compromise. They would delete my broker portal, but it never occurred to them to implement a new one with my information, with the correct information. So what am I to do? You can't enroll unless you have an active broker portal. They won't allow you to be put in their directory, and they wouldn't allow you to move forward. But I was not going to activate a broker portal that was not associated with my new information. So I called, talked to somebody, and said, what's the deal? Why can't I have my own broker portal? And she said, the person who's in charge of implementing the broker portal said she never got a notice from anybody to start a new broker portal for me. But the good news was that she found my old one and could reactivate that. So, no, finally I got them to get it, that I should have my own stuff, I should be able to enroll, I got this part. A week later, I finally get my own broker portal set up, and the reason why you get the broker portal activated is they won't put you in the directory unless you have your broker portal activated. Once they finally got my own broker portal set up and going, the instructions they gave me were a blank PDF file. That was how I was supposed to figure out how to do the broker portal. Along the way in this adventure, I met a man whose situation should have never happened. He was unemployed and should have been on medical assistance. He went to an agent to get insurance for him and his wife, but because the agent was not credentialed with MnSure, the agent didn't enroll him in medical assistance. Now, this is going to the whole myths and misconceptions and all the other urban myths that I have heard about people coming up with about who can enroll, who can't enroll, and all this kind of stuff. So the agent didn't enroll him in medical assistance because they only take applications for medical assistance through the MnSure website. And it apparently never occurred to this agent that he could set up his own account and all this other stuff. Anyway, from July to January, this person who should have been on medical assistance because he was unemployed ended up borrowing $400 a month to pay for an insurance policy because it was important to him to have insurance for him and his wife. I helped him with the MnSure application, and the initial determination was that he did qualify for medical assistance. So while we're waiting on the enrollment confirmation from the county, he didn't want to cancel his commercial policy. He got denied for medical assistance because he had an insurance policy. An insurance policy he couldn't afford, shouldn't have been paid for, but somehow somebody decided in medical assistance, because he was already had an insurance policy, he couldn't qualify for medical assistance. This merry-go-round went on for almost 3 months until I finally got it settled. We had to go back and forth. We had to do a whole lot of stuff. But get this, another policy that MnSure has and really needs to be addressed is, because it was a medical assistance application, brokers don't get paid for medical assistance. I'm donating all of my time on this to help him. It was the right thing to do. I wasn't going to throw him to the wolves when I found that out. I followed through, set up. But all this time I'm taking, we don't get paid for medical assistance. The sisters do. There's other qualifications who have the same type of thing get paid for medical assistance enrollment. The brokers don't get paid for that. So finally, a lot of hours later, finally got him into medical assistance, and he was able to drop the commercial policy. another side of this, I met a lady who was retiring in her job in January and wanted her plan to start on February 1st. She knew which plan she wanted and was concerned about not having the plan available because of the caps if she waited until after December 15th. So she enrolled before December 15th. She knew what plan she wanted. She knew she had employer-sponsored coverage until the end of January and then wanted to move into this policy on February 1st. The only option Venture would allow her was a January 1st start date, but they were going to cancel her policy altogether and hold her tax credits hostage until she had an appeal hearing that they scheduled at the end of January. This not only highlights the huge flaws in the technology they use, but points out some absolutely screwy policies that they have as well. I got the carrier involved, and with their help, we were able to get her to the right start date with the right plan that she wanted without compromising her tax credits. The one I found to be most sad was the day I was helping a lady enroll, and this lady had a really strong accent, plus she had a speech impediment, so she was really, really, you know, concerned about her speech and talking to me, but I was able to get her comfortable with talking to me and helping her to enroll. She had a problem with her application. When you call the broker line, I encourage you, anybody, to try the broker line that they give to brokers. You will hear this message go on and on and on about how if you don't want to wait forever on for somebody to answer the phone, the other alternative is to send them an email and they'll get back to you in 48 hours. How is that helping when you're sitting there with a client trying to get them enrolled? So my next plan B was to have her call the regular line and ask them. Well, she was afraid of talking and really self-conscious about how she was talking. When the person on the Minsure side found out I was a broker, this person, somehow it made sense to her to start screaming at me to tell me to stop talking, and if I didn't stop helping her, she was going to hang up on me. I needed to get this lady on the phone to ask questions. And somehow the goal of helping the customer got lost them on that. One more encounter I have, I've got lots of stories,
Cole,
but you also have...
Ms. Cole, we've got your written testimony, and we've all got lots of emails and things like that, and just in the interest of time, if you could wrap it up, I would greatly appreciate it.
Yes, I thank you. Yes, you all do have the handout. I've heard lots of myths and misconceptions about who can and who can't enroll in medical assistance. I've been bounced around. The broker portal needs to be fixed. I've got all kinds of misinformation, can't help somebody. What I'm asking you to do is create the tools that help us to help the consumers and help that do that the right way and make sure that we can do what we need to do to help them to get what they need to get. So I'm here to ask you to do something better, and whatever I can do to help, I'm willing to be involved. Thank you.
Ms. Cole, thank you for coming here. Thank you for your testimony. And it's obvious that you care about your job and helping people from this and from the emails. And so thank you for all that. And is there anyone else in the audience that wants to speak for or against the bill before we get to member questions? Not seeing anyone coming out. Ms. Cole, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess a few things are on my mind with regard to this bill, and I think it's interesting, Representative Dean, that you said that it's more possible now than it was before to do this repeal, and I'm not seeing that path with the instability that we're seeing at the federal level. We don't know what kind of program might even exist at the federal level, so I'd be quite concerned about having no replacement in place in the event that what we're dumping people into at the federal level could potentially not be here. So that's just a comment. The other thing that I'm very curious about is what we're hearing from the counties on this and from METS, because the eligibility portal was a big part of what ended up getting built. About I don't know, I think about half the people that enroll through MNsure end up in some way, shape, or form connected to a public program, and so they go through this eligibility portal. Our counties have spent an awful lot of their resources trying to build this up to get their eligibility portals working, and I've heard down in my neck of the woods very, you know, positive things, that things are starting to work. I think that, as Representative Hoppe said, we certainly have heard stories, and we've heard through our email, through phone calls, and have worked to help constituents in previous years. This year was kind of a different ball game, and with regard to the fact that the eligibility portal was up and running and usable, is that where do those public programs people go now? Because are we going to dismantle the METS program? What happens?
Representative Dean.
Mr. Chair, Representative Halverson, you're from Dakota County, is that correct? Yeah, I did have an opportunity to meet with Dakota County and met with Mr. Harder, who's doing a great job down there, and actually did a cubicle ride-along in your county to with the county caseworkers that actually deal with people trying to become eligible and trying to sign up. And very, very much like many of the other counties around the state, it's a larger county. And is suffering under this. So I've met with tiny counties, large counties, medium counties. Dakota County is a large county. But they're all suffering under the same thing, and they have to add people to this. The eligibility determination is actually a federal operation of healthcare.gov, and our interface with that is state-to-state. You have to look at how that works. So one of the things that I did in working through this bill is talk to folks who could tell me what the user experience is like if I lived in Hudson, Wisconsin, or if I lived in Iowa. And I could actually walk through from a user experience to say, how do I sign up, and what's the difference between what Wisconsin and what's their user experience and what's our user experience. And what the some of the things that I found out in traveling around and talking to many, many county boards and county caseworkers is a very familiar tone, and that's that that they are very stressed. County caseworkers are very, very stressed in terms of being able to work and help with people, that they have been given widgets and workarounds and Lucky Charms to try to get through their day. They've all had to add people. Dakota County has had to add people. Hennepin County's had to add people. Washington County, where I live, has had to add many people just to try to keep up with where this is going. And when you talk about county caseworkers, that's a very important piece, because I believe that they need to be the center of the wheel of whatever we wind up with. County caseworkers really need to be there, because the families that are going to be on public programs 5 years from now are the same families that are there now, except they're going to be 5 years older. So the county caseworkers really are the best folks at being able to deal directly with families in county programs. MNsure's, it's not just half of people on MNsure are on county public programs. It's the great majority of people on MNsure are on county programs, are on public programs, and that's why you see the purple in this graph as being so small, because of the disproportionate weight on public programs that is going through MNsure. So that's actually part of the problem. But what I think we need to do is we need to separate completely and wholly with a bright line private health insurance and public programs, and counties need to be absolutely at the center of working with, and our solution to the public side of this needs to start with the counties and right with the county workers who work with the people. So that is what I have learned over the past year plus in trying to go around the state and trying to find out as much as I can. When I do a town hall on MNsure, first I'll meet in the afternoon with county caseworkers at a library, county courthouse, try to get caseworkers out during the last couple hours of the day, and then do a town hall at night. In many instances, the county caseworkers will come to the town hall at night. And my favorite instance of that was when county caseworkers, I believe, in Olivia came to the town hall at night. At first, I thought there was a basketball game, but there was 100 people jammed into a library all ready to talk about Minsure. And the county caseworkers were there with the insurance brokers, and they ended up sitting next to each other. And their discussion was that the county caseworkers discovered in talking to the insurance brokers that they were doing their job, and the insurance brokers found out by talking to the county caseworkers that they were doing their jobs. And that was that dynamic is one that I think we have to really, really focus on in a solution, and a long-term solution that really separates the public programs from the private health insurance because they're doing each other's jobs right now. But you're absolutely right, Representative Halverson. That needs to be the middle, the center of what we come up with as a solution.
Thank you, Representative Dean. Representative Halverson?
And well, yes.
All the members, I've had a couple of notes from other people. We should try to keep our questions to the commerce parts of this. I think Representative Dean's intention is to get it to the HHS Finance Committee, and then they can ask more of the HHS-type questions.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to follow up, I've had numerous conversations with county employees and county leaders as well, and have heard very different things, so I think that should be taken into account. It sounds like what the answer that I'm hearing is that we would need to create a new program for the portals for our public programs people. And so what that looks like, I have concerns about creating more instability in a marketplace that we're trying to stabilize. So if we're not sure what we're going to have to create for people on public programs, I have some concerns about that.
Representative Halverson, thank you. Do you want Representative Dean to respond to that, or should we have other questions, members? Representative Hillstrom first, I think, and then Representative Pinto.
Mr. Chair, mine's just a statement. I'm just based on the fact that we're hearing federally that they're eliminating the Affordable Care Act and Obamacare, I'm a little surprised that the state of Minnesota and this Commerce Committee is going to vote to have Minnesota enroll in Obamacare. So, Mr. Chair, I'm going to ask for a roll call, and I have nothing else.
Roll call having been requested. Representative Pinto.
Hey, Mr. Chair, I'm just following up on Representative Halverson's comment. So unlike Representative Slocum, I did request to be on Chair Dean's committee, although I'm very new to it, so I'm still learning things. But I guess I wanted to just confirm my understanding that a majority of the folks getting signing up for health insurance coverage via Minsure are doing so via the public programs. This would not affect that. So setting aside a separate bill, a separate proposal to address public programs, my understanding is, although it talks about even the language that it takes the place of Minsure, Minsure still would exist, and the majority of people getting health insurance through Minsure would still be doing so via the public programs. So I guess I just want to confirm my understanding that that's right.
Representative Dean.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pinto, that's incorrect. This would effectively dismantle Minsure. People would access public programs through the eligibility determination federally and then be referred back to the counties. So that's how that would work. Now, Medicaid would continue to exist, and under this plan, unless something else was activated, Minnesota Care would still plan. So our public plans, the benefit plans, would not change. This would just eliminate Minsure. And that's the key to this from and I think that any state that has done this, and if you ask Oregon or if you ask Hawaii, not exactly red states that have had this, that have decided to go in a different direction, their governors and legislators have been thanked for putting their state first to try to get them out of this. Minnesota lost more than any other state in getting into Obamacare. We shouldn't be penalized to get out of it, and we need to move our state with a Minnesota solution, so that's what this is attempting to do.
Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I guess just clarifying, it seems like still Minnesota would have to set up a new system, whether it's keeping, I guess it wouldn't be keeping Minsure, but setting up a new system to assess eligibility for those public programs. So not only sending a minority of folks to the federal exchange, it still would have the majority of people with a new system needing to be set up. Is that, if I'm understanding that right?
Representative Dean.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pinto, the language requires Commerce in consultation with DHS Minute and Miniature Board to develop and present to the 2018 legislature an implementation plan for converting Minnesota, so that that would be worked out within that plan within the next year. So this is not an immediate implementation, and we want to make sure that we work with stakeholders. We don't want to pull the rug out from underneath county caseworkers. We also don't want to pull the rug out from underneath Minnesota families who've had that done to them several times. And just because you're on a public program doesn't mean that you don't deal with MNsure and the hassles of being kicked off a program or being told that you don't qualify or being told that you can't get medicine at CVS. So Minnesotans have had enough of this, and I think I would encourage members to support the proposal.
Thank you, Representative Pinto. Not seeing any other questions, Representative Dean will give you the final word.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I just want to say just three things. MNsure is not financially sustainable. If you look at the projections that I have shown you, the projection that the governor has MNsure spending half as much money in the next biennium. I would point out that MNsure is not functional. The GAO gave four standards for effectiveness, for actually does this thing work or not. We are 0-4. The legislative auditor tested this in an audit and found $270 million wasted over 6 months because the eligibility determination was not correct. We asked, after finding that legislative auditor's report, we told the administration that they need to check the people if people actually qualify with a periodic data match. They have not done that once for one person. I would also point out that if you are a person who qualifies for Minnesota Care, if you make $100,000 a year and you say you make $40,000 a year and you're a family of four, you're put on Minnesota Care. And at the end of that year, you're put on Minnesota Care. If you say you make $60,000 a year and you make $100,000, at the end of that year, the IRS sends you a bill. The way we are currently doing this does not work. It's not fair. It's not fiscally responsible. But even if all that weren't true, even if it wasn't, if it was financially sustainable, even if it did work, it's hurting people right now, and that's why I think we need to move past it and ask for your support.
Thank you, Representative Dean. With that, I will renew my motion that House File 10, as amended, be re-referred to
GovOps.
GovOps. Thank you, Representative Dean and Mr. Reynolds. Roll call having been requested, the clerk will take the roll.
Representative Hoppe.
Aye.
Representative Benton.
Aye.
Representative Allen. Representative Anderson.
Aye.
Representative Applebaum. Representative Barr.
Aye.
Representative Davids.
Aye.
Representative Franzen.
Aye.
Representative Helverson.
No.
Representative Hillstrom.
Nope.
Representative Johnson.
No.
Representative Kreisha. Representative Loon.
Aye.
Representative Loonen.
Yes.
Representative Nash. Representative O'Driscoll.
Yes.
Representative Pinto.
No.
Representative Rosenthal. Representative Slocum?
No.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative Swidzinski?
Yes.
By a vote of 11-6, the motion does prevail. Thank you, members. Thank you, Representative Dean. With that, Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
House File 1234. Representative Davids, do you want to go ahead and move House File 1234?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. House File 1234 is a first-time home buyers bill, and I would appreciate it if Mr. Eggers from the Realtors, Minnesota Realtors, could go through the bill and why this is probably one of the finest bills ever written.
Thank you, Representative Davids. Mr. Egger, welcome back to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Paul Egger, Vice President of Governmental Affairs for the Minnesota Realtors. It's good to be back less than 24 hours later in committee. And, Mr. Chairman, I'll be brief. I know your time is short here, but I just wanted to share our support for this bill. This is an important initiative that's trying to help people who want to become homeowners in Minnesota that are having a difficult time saving for a down payment. And I just want to highlight a couple of points, and then I'd like to turn it over to our president for a few words. If any of you have had a chance to look through the complete February forecast document, there is a section on the housing sector, and I just want to read you a couple of quick items from that. One is, quote, young adults, millennials, have been slower to enter the housing market than previous generations. It goes on to say that, quote, if household formation rates remain sluggish due to weaker than expected labor market conditions or headship rates among young adults, Minnesota's housing recovery is unlikely to perform as forecast. There's also an AP story in January that appeared in the Pioneer Press, and just a couple of items from that that were interesting and relevant to this particular bill. And one was that the median net worth of millennials is $10,090, which is less than half of what it was for baby boomers. It also went on to cite that boomers will need younger generations to pay their homes, to buy their homes and invest in the financial markets to protect their own savings. So this is an important issue not only for people who want to become homeowners, but for all of us that are living in the state. That we see first-time home buyers excel and enter the market. With that, the housing sector and the overall economy are closely linked, and we certainly need to add some new tools to the toolbox to help first-time home buyers. With that, Mr. Chair, I'd like to turn it over to Ms. Patty Zuzic, who's our 2017 Minnesota Realtors President.
Thank you, Mr. Egger. Ms. Zuzak, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, my name is Patty Zuzak. I am the 2017 president of the Minnesota Realtors Association and a practicing realtor myself. On behalf of 18,000 realtors in Minnesota, we respectfully ask for your support of our first-time homebuyer savings account, House File 1234. Homeownership is the foundation for healthy communities, safe and secure neighborhoods, for all of Minnesota families. Homeownership helps to build wealth and is a source of revenue for our local governments. We should be doing everything we can to encourage homeownership rather than discouraging it. This tax-preferred savings account would help first-time home buyers overcome some of the challenges of getting into their first home, such as saving for their down payment, when they have so many other debts that they're facing, such as student loans, escalating rent costs, car payments, and daycare. This new account will help millennials and others plan for the future and help save more of their own money, and get one step closer to home ownership. I thank you for your time, and we hope that you can support House Bill 1234.
Ms. Zuzak, thank you for your testimony, and we have great faith in the author of the bill. Anybody else in the audience want to speak for or against this bill? Not seeing anybody. Any member questions for the author or the testifiers? Not seeing any of those either. With that, Representative Davis, we'll give you the final word.
Members, and thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, I really appreciate your support.
Representative Davids renews his motion that House File 1234 be re-referred to the Committee on Jobs. Sorry, my fault, the Committee on Taxes. One of those committees. Jobs, taxes, they're the same. So Representative Davids renews his motion that House File 1234 be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes. Those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Davids. Thank you, members.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
Representative Davids, you did so well. Do you want to stay up there for one more?
I'd love to. Take another bite of the apple.
Representative Davids, House File 5. And Representative Davids, I assume that you would like to both move House File 5 and move the DE4 amendment.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move House File 5. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move the H0005 DE4 amendment.
Representative Davids moves not only House File 5, but moves the DE4 amendment, move to get the bill in the shape the author would like it to be in. Those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Davids, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. House File 5 is the reinsurance program. We have bipartisan support at this point, but I want to preface my remarks with the fact that this is a work in progress. Normally when I bring a bill to a committee, it's the done deal. She's ready to go. I'd like to describe what we're trying to do here, but also I want members to understand that I have met with the Department of Commerce, will continue to meet with the Department of Commerce. This is a bill about ideas on how do we set up a reinsurance program that works, that will save the market for 2018. In past months, Commissioner Rothman has been very clear on the seriousness of the situation, and I really don't want to get into why we're here. I want to really work very hard on establishing a market for 2018. It's that serious. Mr. Chairman, your Senate File 1 that passed, did some very, very good things. I'm working with Governor Dayton to have a premium buy-down, and there were some reforms there like continuity of care that are very, very important. We didn't push this one that hard at that time because this one needs some more work. This is basically what will determine if there's a market in 2018 in the individual market at all. So that's how serious this is. I've been very, like I said, very happy to work with the Commerce Department. I don't know if the bill as amended is the way it needs to be. I'd like to describe what I'm trying to do here in this bill. There are other ideas out there. There are other models out there. The Commerce Department has some ideas that I'm taking very, very seriously. So I guess today is not the day to necessarily talk about funding. It's the day to talk about commerce policy, and that's what I intend to keep my remarks limited to. Basically, what we're doing is we're setting up a reinsurance plan that would have an attachment point at $50,000, and staff or House Research, if I get something wrong here, please say time out. We need to correct the chairman here because I want to describe this properly and what we're trying to do. First of all, the bill would has a $50,000 attachment point, so when someone has a claim, and we're using the MSHA board to work on putting this thing together. These are outlines on how this should work. The MSHA board would step up with a lot of this. There's the Commerce Department's involved here, obviously. And so there's a $50,000 attachment point. Even though the MSHA board's involved in this, the MSHA board, it's not like the old days where you had an MSHA policy. If you couldn't get insurance, you could get MSHA, and you had a separate policy. You could not be more than 1.25%. Of the average of health plans in the state of Minnesota. That's the MSHA Act of 1976. And so that is still on the books. It's very limited use now, but I think that's the appropriate place to put this. So you have a $50,000 attachment point. You'd go up to $250,000 after that. The reinsurance would drop off. There's either a 50 or 75, if I could ask Ms. Pompo, is it a 50 or 75% reinsurance from 50 to 250?
Ms. Pompo.
Or copay. Copay, I'm sorry.
Chair and Representative, it's a 50 to 70% co-insurance rate.
Okay.
So the reinsurance program will reimburse for 50 to 70% of the amount in between the attachment point and the reinsurance cap.
And thank you. And
thank you, Ms. Pompo.
And members, that would be determined by the MSHA board as the plan was put together. So the Commerce Department has some other ideas that I'm interested in looking at. They approach it a little bit differently. We're not talking funding today because that'll be a big issue in the finance committees. So basically, Mr. Chairman, members, that's what the bill does. $50,000 attachment point, max of $250,000, co-insurance of between $50,000 and $75,000. Those are the parameters that MSHA would work with to put this together. So I would stand open for questions for members or other testimony, however you want to call it, Mr. Chair.
Well, Representative Davids, I think we'll do this. Representative Anderson had a question early on, so we'll let her ask that. And then Commissioner Rothman would like to jump ahead of other testifiers, and we're going to let him because he's the commissioner. So, Representative Anderson?
Actually, Mr. Chair is on the previous bill.
Okay, we're going to have to go back to the previous bill. You had a question for Representative Dean? For 1234. I'm sorry, Representative Anderson. I didn't know you.
Do that after.
Okay. Then Representative Davids will have the commissioner come down. Commissioner Rothman.
Good
Commissioner, welcome back to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and good afternoon. I do two things. One, a little bit of a highlight of why we're here, not in detail, but a little bit of that. And then second of all, just to lay out, go to the bill and give you some thoughts on tweaks. And I understand that it's off the top. It's sort of a work in progress. We're working together on trying to come to a good place to the extent it moves forward and how we're going to do that. So, again, from a very high level, you do all know why we're here. The 25% premium discount reduction was very important, one, to bring rates down, but also it's an important factor in helping to stabilize the marketplace, not just for last year, but also as a starting point, you know, actuarially and wherever we are going forward for 2018 and the years ahead. It was a temporary emergency fix, but at the same time, it was helpful as a baseline to get us to a better place. I do want to say that I believe we must look at all tools to put Minnesota's individual market insurance market in a more secure, sustainable pathway for 2018 and going forward. I have used before the medical metaphor that the patient last year had a massive heart attack. It went into the emergency room. We all know why. It was because of the 100,000-plus Minnesotans that Blue Cross moved off of their plans. And I just want to say that, most importantly, it's important for the legislature, for the Minnesota public, all those that are in the marketplace, to not be in a place like that ever again. The patient is still in an intensive care situation. And again, first and foremost, we want to avert any crisis next year. Because of that, we're sort of at a tipping point, and I want to describe just at a very high level the importance of what this would do and some of the things we need to continue to do. Most importantly, we need to monitor and watch, because there's uncertainty about what may happen at the federal level that would affect Minnesota. And I think this is, and other opportunities, other things that the legislature may look at, it's an important opportunity for Minnesota to do what it can to protect ourselves regardless of what happens at the federal level. There are several key goals. One, affordable premiums. Two, market stability. And I think three, network access. And while these are key factors, I just want to say that one of the objectives of this proposal would be to help keep rates at an affordable level, stabilize the marketplace in terms of the rate stabilization, and to the extent we can get rates to an affordable factor, to be able to attract and retain healthy people in the marketplace, which I think is an important objective. The challenge we face in Minnesota is that a very small number of people are causing the highest costs and highest claims for the entire marketplace. And I have said that before. Numbers in 2015, I think, were at 2.2% causing the majority of the costs. Now, that was in a marketplace, an enrollment of somewhere between 250 and 265,000 people. This year, we know already that at the end of the marketplace, we're going to have a lot fewer number of people in the marketplace to cover these kinds of costs going forward. Again, an important reason why we need some rate stabilization. So I understand that there are a variety of options being put forward. All deserve to be fully reviewed to determine which can best help the individual marketplace. The governor has proposals. They're out there. But I do want to make some important points about the reinsurance options, and Representative Davids alluded to this. There are two basic ways to go on reinsurance. One is to develop it by an attachment point. These are, you set it at, for example, in this bill, you set it at 50, you put the higher level, and then you develop some coinsurance. That's what we would call, or it's been a familiar way to do reinsurance. It was also what was used by the federal government for the ACA for 3 years. There's a second model, which I think deserves full review and merit to the extent that we can in comparison. There are pros and cons to each, I admit that and acknowledge that, but Alaska has put forward a model that is being reviewed by the federal government at this point that basically targets specific high-cost chronic medical conditions for reinsurance. The advantage of that is to basically focus the dollars we're using towards funding and premium relief for the consumers that go towards the high-cost chronic conditions, bringing down and providing more predictable costs for the insurers. So those are the options. I know we're here today on this one. I just want to say this, that Commerce is here to help. But before I get to the bill specifics, I want to emphasize one major important thing, that time is truly of the essence. And I'll give you this sort of a bookend so you know why it's imperative to move forward very quickly. So right now, insurers are starting to decide whether to be in the individual market in 2018. The deadline for submitting their rate filings to the department is in the May timeframe. So they're already starting to think about, well, what they should be doing and calculating their rates, probably starting April 1 and after that, and how this plays into it. And going back again, we want to avoid last summer and last fall to the extent we can. And second of all, there's specific 1332 waiver deadlines that the federal government has in place. So this reinsurance proposal has to go through a federal approval process. It's in the bill, and it's what's called a 1332 waiver. But that process is not up to us. They have their own time limits, and the sooner we get it to them, the sooner the better, and that is all the more imperative to why we needed to have House File 5 completed and submitted as soon as possible. So let me turn to some of the specifics in the bill. And again, these are just to point out some things, and maybe we can work together on them. As Representative Davis has pointed out, this is really to take the existing MSHA structure, the existing board, and to ask them not to do the old system, but to do a reinsurance system. With respect to the board, I think we should take a look at the composition of the board. I'll just throw this out there. I have three or four things. One is that the majority of the board are insurers. Excuse me. And so having insurers set the reinsurance rates and set their premium rates causes concern for me. And that's because then ultimately, you know, who decides then how much money comes out of the whatever funding source is chosen at the end of the day? It's problematic just to leave it in the hands of the insurers. There are one break in oversight in this is to have the Department of Commerce do what it does and do it as well. So I want to make sure that we have the necessary oversight to fix or to deal with that situation. There's a minor thing here, and that's that there's two members of the MSHA board that are required to be enrollees, and we don't have enrollees anymore in MSHA, so we'll have to figure out board composition on that. Let me turn then to the section on the payment parameters. This is the minimum attachment point of 50, and then the upper attachment point of 250 with the coinsurance set somewhere between 50 and 70% in this bill. We've taken a preliminary look, our staff, our actuaries, at how much these parameters would raise in terms of reinsurance, and we believe that it's likely to be insufficient to reduce the rates as much as needed. I would just draw a comparison to what the Senate version is. The Senate bill has similar provisions, but the parameters would raise more reinsurance funds to go towards premium relief than this proposal does. So I'd like to try to keep an open mind to try to, you know, figure out what is the best case for those parameters and how they could be set. On page six at line 6.1, this is, I alluded to this earlier, where it says the commissioner shall review and approve. What I would suggest here is that this plus the line at 6.8 is where it says the commissioner must or permit health carriers to revise, basically does not give the department sufficient discretion to do review. I would just go back to and point out the language that currently exists in MCHA, which the old language was simply the commissioner shall approve, modify, or reject. And that would give sufficient discretion to change the parameters or make sure that we're not just letting whatever through. On page 8.18, this is a minor and small issue, so I'm not highlighting this as a significant matter, but I would just compare this to the Senate language and need to reconcile how best this reporting can be done. Not that it's not inappropriate, but I think that something else, or we need to work on a reconciliation on that. More importantly, let me turn to the premium security plan account and the funding. I don't want to speak to the source of the funding, but in terms of the mechanism, the matching calibration between the amount needed on the premium for reinsurance reduction and the amount of funds. First of all, I think we can work these out, but we have to figure out the mechanism for raising the dollars and how they get through the Department of Commerce or paid to MSHA to pay for this. It's just a mechanics issue. And to reconcile that with the Senate version. Second of all, I think we need to, when we look at the parameters, you know, if there's flexibility that the board has in setting the parameters, they might be small or they might be large in terms of how much reinsurance is needed. We at the department, I don't know, and my staff doesn't know whether or not the funding sources are adequate enough to pay for what's needed for the reinsurance, or whether there's too much, or how do we calibrate that for this year? And then going forward to 2018 and 2019, how do we match the need versus the revenue that comes in and to calibrate that? So again, we have the question about whether the revenue is sufficient to cover the need for the, we can sort that out and look at the numbers. And then on the innovation waiver section on 10.12 and et cetera, I guess we'll probably have a fiscal note that'll be talked about, but the costs, there will be costs involved in doing the 1332 waiver. So we'll need, and the Senate does provide funding for the cost for the Department of that, which means that I would, you know, generally object to Section 12 on lines 11.6, et cetera, so that the Department doesn't have to pay for that. Yeah. That's simple. Hopefully we can get the funding to do this. And then the other most important thing is to make sure that I think we have the sufficient language in 10.17 through 19 to have the authority to do what we want. And I just want to, for the record, say that our goal and our objective in getting the 1332 waivers are twofold. Mainly, they're hold harmless. One is to make sure that we hold ourselves harmless from the APTC impact. And second, to hold us harmless from the BHP Minnesota Care. I mean, that's the main objective. I think we're all on the same page, but that's what we're going to be using it for. I think those are the main points. I can get into more details or happy to answer any other questions. But again, these were just things to point out. I know it's a work in progress, and we'll continue to work with Representative Davids as we move forward.
Thank you, Commissioner. Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Before we get to other testimony members' question, I appreciate the Commissioner's comments here. Members, this has to work. We've got to get this right. And the challenge we have is we have no clue what the feds are doing. We really don't. So we're trying to put this together in a very uncertain time. And I think we're up to the task. I think working together, we can do this. And I agree with the Commissioner in that time is of the essence. We need to get this put together on a very rapid basis so we can get proper waivers. And I thank the Commissioner for pointing out some things on the board makeup. We do have to look at that closer because the board of MSHA was set up for basically a different purpose. There are some similarities, but it was set up for a different purpose. So I think that the board, we do need to look at that. I agree with the Commissioner on that's an issue that we do need to look at because, like I said, the board, when it was originally set up in 1976, and there's been some changes since then, was not going to be tasked to do what we're asking them to do here. So I think the commission brings up some very good points that we will want to work through and to make this work.
Thank you, Representative Davis. Members, I believe the commissioner needs to leave. We moved him ahead in the testimony. So if members have any questions for the Representative Lunan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To the commissioners, one quick question. Has the department had any conversations with the plans this year regarding of what they're thinking or what they're anticipating? I know last year we felt like on our side we got at it kind of late. Has there been any talk yet or any staging? I agree with the notion we need to go forward with what we know. And what we don't know, we can't let it freeze us. We got to do that. But has there been any of those conversations?
Commissioner Rothman.
Mr. Chair and Representative, I can say that yes, but only preliminarily. At a very high level in terms of sort of a check, in time, basically, okay, now that enrollment, open enrollment, except for a special enrollment period, where are we? But it's really just, as we've talked about today, a very high level of what's possible at the federal level or what's not possible, the uncertainties there. Second of all, the importance of time and being of the essence. And then seeing, I guess, as things go along, what the various proposals do or don't do during the legislative process. And then to, I'd say on the regulatory side, our goal, and we always continue to monitor the marketplace, and those are conversations in the regulatory environment, but I just would say at a very high level, just sort of a touch-base type conversation, but nothing, anything more than that.
Thank you, Commissioner. Representative Lunan.
Yeah, final point. And we had the plans in testifying the other day, and I was trying to find out what would be that date if we acted, it would be too late for them to put this in for 2018. And she contended she couldn't answer it, but one of the comments she did make was, one of the predicating factors will be how fast the department acts when they're working with you. And so I would hope this all gets pushed right to the top, mm-hmm. Once we go. And it was good to hear your comment about times of the essence that we have to fly. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Lunan. Representative Swidzinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just my questions to the commissioner. You talked a little bit about and touched about the waiver, that I think it's the 1332 waiver that we get from the federal government for the review. I would just, encourage you, just from the timelines of finishing session, I have all due respect for and the diligence for Representative Davids and his ability to come up with a good compromise and get the job done as far as the individual market is concerned. But I'd encourage the Commerce Department to maybe look at a waiver to give us a couple extra weeks or a month from the federal government because of the due diligence and our ultimate goal here is saving the individual market here in the state. So,
thank you, Representative Swidzinski. Commissioner, did you want to respond to that?
Just a small point, Mr. Chair. The department staff has already been working on the basics of what it would take to and what we need to do for a 1332 waiver and open the conversation with the appropriate staff and to be in a position to move as quickly as possible once this legislation passes to be able to submit it as fast as possible under the circumstances.
Thank you, Commissioner. Representative Fenton, did you have a question? I'm sorry.
Not at this time.
Sorry, I thought you had your hand up. And Representative... Okay. Any other questions, members? Apparently I'm seeing things. With that, Commissioner, thank you. Ms. Kmit. Ms. Kmit, welcome back to the committee. No hurry, but whenever you're ready, please identify yourself for the tape and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I do have a handout that I would like to have distributed.
Thank you. We will have that distributed. We love handouts.
Well, I'll start with my testimony. Members of the committee, House Commerce Committee, my name is Catherine Kmit, and I represent the Minnesota Council of Health Plans, which is the state trade association for Minnesota's 7 nonprofit health plans. Thank you for the opportunity to provide comments on House File 5 as amended. The Council of Health Plans strongly supports the enactment of a reinsurance program that will help stabilize and sustain the individual market in Minnesota. As amended, House File 5 is modeled after the federal reinsurance program, so it is practical, and the health plans know that it will work for Minnesotans next year. In our state of 5.5 million people, only 5% of Minnesotans buy health insurance on their own. It's an important way for people who work independently, who want to start a business, or who retire early to get the coverage for the care they need. But as we all know, the individual market is not working the way any of us wants. Let me provide some context as to why the establishment of a reinsurance program is so important. Just 12 months ago, the state counted about 270,000 people in the individual market. Since then, premiums increased for the 2017 policy year by roughly 50%, a painful increase that was needed so that premiums might cover all the medical bills. Those premium increases had a big impact because just this February, we learned that the number of people buying coverage had shrunk to about 190,000 people, which is a decrease of about 30% from last year. This is very bad news because that leads even fewer people to help pay for the high cost of medical bills. In other words, rising medical bills will be spread across an even smaller number of people next year, putting upward pressure on premiums once again. To begin fixing this problem, the legislature needs to enact a reinsurance program by the end of March. Once enacted, the reinsurance program will need to be implemented quickly to help reduce premium increases for 2018. Here's how reinsurance works. Premiums are the sum of claims and expenses. When premium rates are set, they are based on expected claims. Without reinsurance, the cost of claims will be a lot higher. With reinsurance, the cost of claims will be lower. Having a reinsurance program will help reduce upward pressure on premiums. Currently, the health plans are in the process of developing their rates, their product offerings and rates for 2018. These new product and rates must be filed in early May of this year. The health plans are looking to the state to enact and implement a state-based reinsurance program so that the plans can account for it as they develop their products and rates for 2018. This is why it is so important to enact the reinsurance program before the end of March. Given all of the uncertainty at the federal level and the urgency to stabilize the individual market for Minnesotans, we believe House File 5, as amended, will move Minnesota in the right public policy direction. Taking this action will send a strong signal to the industry that a reinsurance program will be in place to provide the stability needed in the individual market. We need to help Minnesotans who buy insurance on their own. The immediate impact of a reinsurance program will be to reduce premium increases and help more Minnesotans get insurance next year. House File 5, as amended, can be the bridge to help people continue getting the coverage they need in 2018. We appreciate the work that Representative Davids and Representative Hoppe and their colleagues and staff have devoted to developing this important legislation. Thank you for the opportunity to testify, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Kmit. Representative Halverson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. Kmit. Couple questions. First of all, when you talked about the number of people who stopped participating in the individual market, that 30% decline is pretty dramatic. Do we have good data about where those people went? Did they stop participating in insurance at all? Did they go to another marketplace, like go to, did they, you know, get a job and go to a group plan, or do we have data on that?
Ms. Kmit.
Mr. Chair and Representative Halverson, the answer is I don't know. I don't know if this data is available yet. I think it comes from probably doing a survey to find out how many people are out there who are either uninsured or in the individual market or in a group product. But, of course, there are some people who probably transitioned into a group product, but we don't know how many that is yet. What I do think has probably happened, however, is a number of people have simply dropped out of the market altogether.
Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've heard anecdotal stories like that. I was just wondering if there's data to back that up, because we want to be sure that if, you know, we restabilize the market, that we're going after those folks to get them back in. The other thing I'm wondering if you can clarify or confirm for me, one of the things that I often think about when I think about health care coverage in Minnesota is that we have always historically had a really high participation rate by our employers, higher than other states. So our individual market, I've understood that it's strangely small compared to other states our size because of the participation of small employers. And I wanted to just confirm that that's correct as we think about who we're going to be trying to get back into our individual market.
Ms. Commit.
And Mr. Chair and Representative Halverson, you raise a good point. We are in the a great position as a state of Minnesota where we have really committed employers who typically offer coverage to their employees probably at a much higher rate than in other states. And as a result, we have a low uninsurance rate. Employers are more generous and they want to compete for workers, so they tend to offer good benefits to their employees. So I would say it's about two-thirds of the entire population is covered through the employer market.
Wow. Thank you.
Well, thank you, employers.
Thank you, Representative Halverson. Mr. Graves, Ms. Commit, thank you. Nice job. Mr. Graves, welcome back to the committee. Please identify yourself for the tape and proceed when you're ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Bentley Graves from the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. On behalf of employers, you're welcome. That was a joke. Not a very funny one, apparently. Anyway.
Representative, or Mr. Graves, just please proceed.
Bentley Graves, on behalf of the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. As you heard my, you all, I believe, heard my testimony on House File 1, the individual market is not one that most people think the business community has much interest in. However, this is where self-employed people go for insurance. It's also where increasingly a number of small employers have turned to with their employees to purchase coverage who haven't been able to keep up with rates rising in the group markets. And so we strongly support the need for a state-based reinsurance program. Appreciate Chair Davidson and Chair Hoppe and their work in bringing this bill forward. In kind of looking at reinsurance, we've kind of set out three criteria when looking at these proposals, one of which is mechanically to make sure it works efficiently, that could be stood up quickly for 2018 to have the desired impact on the 2018 market and beyond. From a size perspective, to make sure that it's big enough to have the desired impact on rates, to keep folks in the individual market 2018 and beyond. And then we obviously are also interested in the funding piece to make sure that we're not adding to the burden of taxes that ratepayers in the fully insured market pay, where folks in the fully insured market now pay about 10 cents of every fully insured dollar in taxes of some kind. This proposal on House File 5, I think, meets many of those benchmarks. We heard from Commissioner Rothman that there may be some additional input that he and his staff can offer on kind of the overall size of this, and certainly appreciate their input here. And so I just mostly want to kind of offer our appreciation support for the bill. I note, though, that Chairman Davis did say that this is a work in progress and an effort to kind of identify one of those areas where we would like to be helpful in working towards refining this proposal. We do have significant concerns to that third piece about funding, about reviving the MCHA assessment and that becoming, again, more of a burden on ratepayers in the individual market. So, but noting, again, that that's not necessarily within the jurisdiction of this committee, but wanting to make sure that we have the opportunity to flag that as something that we'd be interested in working on going forward with the chairman and any others interested in that. So thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Graves. Nice job, and your concerns are duly noted. With that, Mr. Tollefson. John, oh, here you are. I'm sorry. I saw you earlier, and I lost you. Mr. Tollefson, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I also have a letter, for distribution. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members, and Chairman Davids for the opportunity to testify today with you. My name is John Tollefson, and I represent 20,000 registered nurses in Minnesota who serve at patients' bedsides in hospitals, state facilities, and in the community. We have concerns about creating a state reinsurance program for the individual health insurance market, and we ask for the legislature to carefully consider if reinsurance is the right approach to address rising premiums and deductibles and shrinking provider networks. Some are wary of government involvement in healthcare, but make no mistake,
Reinsurance is a major government program. Any reinsurance program is designed to pay health companies for high-cost claims, but in return, there is no guarantee the insurance companies will offer affordable premiums, reasonable deductibles, and comprehensive provider networks. Health companies are not transparent and have insufficient public financial disclosures, and we have no guarantee as taxpayers that our public dollars will make things better. All Minnesotans need quality coverage, access to their own health care providers, and affordable prices. We share your concern that if health insurance is too expensive, Minnesotans will delay or skip care, costing time, money, jobs, and lives in the long run. We have seen many people move to small group plans, to less formal health sharing plans, or out of the insurance market altogether because of the problems with the current plans. There is nothing in a reinsurance program that would prevent insurance companies from continuing to offer the same expensive plans, lowering premiums by a marginal amount, but doing nothing to address deductibles and networks will not offer enough value for Minnesotans. Ultimately, we believe the problem of increasing health care costs won't be solved until the profit motive is removed from the system. The individual market shows the private insurance system is not working. We believe that sending taxpayer money into the black box of the corporate insurance industry with no plan to ensure that Minnesotans get quality health care for this money is not the solution. It is bad public policy to allow insurance companies to offload the cost of insurance to the public while privatizing the profits. Our hope is that when it comes to people accessing health care, the value of people's lives and health will be placed above the profits of the corporate insurance system. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Tollefson. Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've been meaning to ask Chair Davids about this, and it seems like as good a time as any. As I've heard the discussion up to this point, it seems like the points about cost and access that are kind of made in this letter are not really the reasons for advancing the bill ultimately. Perhaps it would lower premiums, et cetera. It seems like the focus is on keeping the individual insurance market viable next year. And so I guess I just want to make sure I was understanding that correctly.
Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Pinto, you are. Okay. This bill, it's a very, very serious bill because if we don't do this, and if we had made some reforms that we did, there would not be an individual market in 2018. I've talked to various CEOs of various health plans, and they've come up with some very, very good ideas. They're trying to incorporate some of those, but it's that serious that if we don't take action now, and I think Commissioner Rothman several months ago in his comments when he said that the health systems had a massive heart attack, or to paraphrase what he said, he's absolutely right. He's absolutely right. So, no, this is not going to lower everybody's premiums 80%. And, members, we have to think about this a second because 2 years ago, on average, rates went up 40%. This last year, they went up on average 67%. That's 107%. Okay, we bought her down 25%. And so we're still at an 82% increase. And so the gentleman from the Nurses Association made some comments. I disagree with some of them. That's fine. But and one of the problems we have here is we're always addressing how do we pay for things, not why does it cost so much. This is not a bill that asks why does it cost so much. That's another bill. We're going to have more bills than just this one. This is the one that then allows the Commerce Department and the MSHA Board to put a system together to hopefully lower rates some and at least stop increases. Because, like I said, this is very, very serious. If we don't continue to work on some of the reforms, we won't have carriers in the market in 2018. And so this is not the be-all, end-all, Representative Pinto, but I think it's something we have to do quickly. And then we continue to work on the other issues as to why does it cost what it does.
Okay.
Mr. Jacobs, I was going to ask questions about, you know, what kind of guarantee is there that premiums will go down a certain amount or deductibles or limit the increase or something. And it sounds like the answer is, I mean, there really is none in the bill, and that's not, in a way, that's not really the focus from what you said. And so I just want to make sure I'm understanding that, that the focus is really on keeping that market going versus, again, lowering costs or ensuring access or anything in particular in that way.
Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Pinto, in looking at some of the modeling in working with the Commerce Department, they do have projections as to how much this would actually reduce premiums. I don't want to be here saying it's going to reduce premiums X because then when it reduces them Y, then I wasn't right on. But it'd be my goal, I'll just say it, I'd like to see about a 15% reduction by this bill. And so that's not guaranteed. Right. We don't know. We don't know what it's going to be, but we have to get on with it and get started with this to try. I think that this will reduce premiums. It only makes sense that it would, because you're taking some of the risk away from the carriers and you're putting it into the reinsurance pool. So there's going to be less expense to the carrier with this bill. But this is not the bill that says you can charge this much for this procedure or anything like that. I'm trying to, and members that are working with me on this bill, we're trying to save the healthcare system for a market for 2018 and then build on that. Some of it yet this year, some issues yet this year. This is not the last bill, but this one needs to get going, as you heard from the commissioner, so we can be applying for waivers to get this in place.
And final comment, Mr. Chair, I'll just say I recognize the point made in the letter, though, that we may hope that occurs, but you know, the way the bill's set up is that they could, in fact, not apply those funds or that support to loan premiums. The governor's proposal, and one supported by many folks, including myself, the Minnesota Care Buy-In, would, I think, have the accessibility and oversight that we'd be looking for. Senator, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Pinto. Representative Davis.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Pinto, I've studied the governor's proposal, and it looks to me like that costs about $800 million, and it destroys what's left of the individual market. So unless you go to universal care and you have everybody in there at a great expense to the states, I mean, Colorado's went down, Vermont, that didn't work so well. I'll just leave it at that.
Well, and Representative Davids and Representative Pinto and members, if we look at the DE4 amendment that we adopted earlier, page 5, line 5.8, there's a whole section there on payment parameters that are laid out, and I think that's one of the things we could take a look at. And, you know, some of the things that I think Representative Davids is, as he said and the commissioner said, everybody said, it's still a work in progress. But I think, Representative Davids, this is kind of where you're looking to go with this. Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And in various models and research that I've looked at from the department and from others, it does show premium reductions. This is not a guaranteed premium reductions. And I probably shouldn't have said the 15%. I'm not saying that's going to be 15%, but I'm hoping that we start trending the other way, and I think this bill gets us moving in the right direction.
Thank you, Representative Davids. With that, Mr. Quillen from Isaiah. After that will be Mr. Connery from Takash in Minnesota. Mr. Quillen, welcome to our committee. Nice to have you here, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Dan Quillen. I co-chair Isaiah's health equity team. Isaiah is a statewide organization of clergy and congregations and people of faith working for economic and racial justice. We also would ask you to carefully consider if reinsurance is the right approach to address the rising premiums and the deductibles and the shrinking access to provider networks. We believe that sending hundreds of millions of taxpayer dollars into the black box of the insurance industry without strict accountability and greater transparency is not a solution. It is bad public policy to allow insurance companies to offload the cost of insurance to the public while privatizing the profits. We believe that the governor's unsubsidized, lower-cost Minnesota Care buy-in proposal offers a much better vehicle for fixing what is wrong in our individual market. In looking at the projected numbers of possible cost savings, the governor's plan also projects roughly a 12% premium reduction. When you consider that and compare the hundreds of millions of dollars that will need to go into reinsurance to roughly create the same outcome, we think the governor's program is better. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Quillen, nice job. I believe this is your first time in front of this committee.
Yes, it is.
You're welcome back anytime. Nice job.
Thank you.
With that, last testifier that I have listed, Mr. Connery. While Mr. Connery is coming on, don't let Representative Davids talk you into things here. Mr. Connery, is there anybody else while Mr. Connery is getting set? Anybody else that wants to speak for or against the bill? Okay. Mr. Connery, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chairman Hoppe, members of the committee. My name is Chris Connery. I'm here today to speak on behalf of Take Action Minnesota. We're a grassroots organization that advocates for racial, gender, and economic justice at the local, state, and federal level. I'm here today to raise my concerns about House File 5 as amended. We share many of the concerns you've heard from the previous few testifiers about the cost, transparency, and accountability of the reinsurance system that's being proposed, but I'd like to focus on one particular concern we have, its financing. The plan is funded via four and eventually five funding sources, federal funds, MSHA existing monetary reserves, $80 million from the Healthcare Access Fund, and up to $140 million per biennium from a rededicated gross premiums tax. And in starting in 2019, the bill adds member assessments on the insurers who are part of the plan. So MSHA from 1981 to 2006 was funded largely by two sources, enrollee premiums and assessments on the insurers, and the amount of that assessment varied from about 35% to 55%, but ended up being roughly about 50-50. So for consumers, the question we have is what percentage will that be if this is enacted? So will it still be roughly 50%, or will it be 35 to 55%, or 10%, or less? So if the other sources to pay for MSHA are sufficient, will insurers be assessed at all, or will taxpayers be the first people in line to pay, and then insurers will pay only if the plan requires it? And then what are the ripple effects of that on other state-run health care plans that rely on either the Healthcare Access Fund or the gross premiums tax? So I appreciate the work being done here to stabilize the market. It's a need that everybody agrees we need to address, but I'd encourage you to do more work on this bill. Thank you very much for your time, Chairman and members.
Mr. Connery, I'm losing words. That's bad. I will say the same thing to you I said to our previous testifier. Nice job. You're welcome back anytime. We appreciate it, especially brevity, and your comment saying we all know we need to do something. So as we've been talking about, it's still a work in progress, but we appreciate your comments.
Thank you.
One final testifier, I think. And members, it's 4:45. I know we have caucuses scheduled at 5 o'clock, but we're pretty close to a vote on this. We have a two-minute Bob Lunan bill, and then one other short bill. We might go just a little bit later than 5, but I know a number of members have contacted me and said that they want to go to services this evening. I just got off the phone with the Pope. We do not have dispensation, so we're going to try to push through and get done, get to caucus a little bit late, and fulfill our other obligations for the evening. Welcome to the committee, sir. Please identify yourself for the tape and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, committee members, good afternoon. My name is Bob Stein. I'm an independent insurance agent serving individual and small employers and customers in the Twin Cities. I'm also the president of the Minnesota Association of Health Underwriters. I'm here today representing the Agents Coalition, which includes the four professional associations in Minnesota, including the Minnesota Association of Health Underwriters, National Association of Insurance and Financial Advisors, Professional Insurance Agents, and the Independent Insurance Agents. Collectively, we represent over 54,000 licensed insurance agents in Minnesota and their employees. As such, we work closely with both group and individual market consumers on a daily basis. The Agents Coalition for Healthcare Reform has laid out 5 conditions for a successful reinsurance program. Our conditions are as follows. The new reinsurance model must maintain guaranteed issue so that consumers can obtain coverage regardless of their medical conditions. 2, the consumers must be able to select the carrier and the plan of their choice, unlike the old MCHA model, which limited them only to plans offered by MCHA. 3, the state must fund it with a broad funding source, such as general fund or the Healthcare Access Fund. We oppose reinstituting the MCHA assessment because not broad enough, only assessing the fully insured market, which has shrunk to 22% of the entire market. We believe that the viable individual market is a good thing for all Minnesotans. 4, the program must not buy down rates so low that it distorts the small group market by incenting small employers to drop their group plans. 5, the most important, the reinsurance program must be designed in a manner that attracts the maximum carriers and plans for 2018 and beyond to help restore consumer choice and be designed to have a meaningful impact on premium reduction in the individual market. Because this bill meets those criteria, we support the bill, but encourage you to remove any dependence on the MCHA assessment, even as a backup plan.
Thank you, Mr. Stein. Members, any more questions? Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to the testifier, have your organizations done any analysis about, is there a magic dollar amount where those young, healthy people are going to start to reenter the marketplace? Do you have a sense of what the threshold might be to make it appealing for people to reenter the marketplace?
Mr. Stein.
Yes. You know what? It's anywhere. It's a percentage of their income. So it can be anywhere from $100 to $300, and it doesn't seem to stop them from going into the individual market. But it has to be a little bit more than what they would pay at a small employer, because we don't want to incentivize them to go into the individual market and not take a small employer plan.
Thank you. Representative Davids, we'll give you the final word.
Well, thank you. And I'd really like to thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the time we've had here today. And I'd like to thank all the testifiers. Several times, I mean, it kind of hurt my feelings when some people said that it's bad public policy. I'm very sensitive to that. But what I would say is really bad public policy is where we're at right now. That's bad public policy. What we're trying to do here is stabilize the market. And, members, I really appreciate your support. And, Mr. Chairman, I'd really like to thank the staff that has worked on this with me on this. And, Mr. Chairman, I'd really like to thank you for all that you've done in the healthcare area and on this bill and previous bills for your leadership. Members, I just really appreciate your support.
Representative Davids, I think your comment for our staff was entirely, you'll notice we have extra staff here, and I think your comment was entirely appropriate and well taken. With that, Representative Davids renews his motion that House File 5, House File 5 as amended be re-referred to the Committee on HHS Finance. Those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, members. Representative Davids?
Mr. Chairman, having voted on the prevailing side, I'd like to move to reconsider House File 1, 2, 3, 4.
Representative Davids moves to reconsider House File 1234. And, members, I will tell you why we're doing that. This is the previous Davids bill that we voted on, and I inadvertently made the wrong referral to this. It needs to go to the committee to Representative Chair Anderson's committee because it is on page 4 of the previous bill of House File 1234, subdivision 4, page 4, line 4.25, commissioner means the commissioner of revenue. We need to send it to Chair Anderson's committee. So with your indulgence, Representative Davids moves to reconsider the passage of House File 1234. Those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign.
Mr. Chairman, I'll move House File.
Thank you, members.
For State Government Finance.
Thank you, Representative Davids' new motion. And Representative Anderson, my apologies to you. I didn't catch that right away. Do you want to speak to this at all? Thank you, Representative Anderson. Representative Davids moves that House File 1234, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on State Government Finance. Those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Members, thank you for your indulgence. Representative Davids and Representative Anderson, thank you very much. With that, Representative Lunan. And Representative Lunan, I do appreciate your expediency in getting down there. With that, Representative Lunan, if you want to move House File 1443.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move House File 1443, and I've got an oral amendment.
An oral amendment.
What?
State your oral amendment.
Oral amendment's going to be on page 2.
Okay.
On line 2.23.
Thank you.
Right after the words act of.
Oh. Representative Lunan, we actually have a printed oral amendment. So
I never got that.
Nope, that's okay.
Well, I'd like to move the amendment.
Thank you. And we are moving pretty quick these days, and the staff did commendable work and got this amendment drafted for you, knowing that you needed it. With that, Representative Lunan will move the A2 amendment. Formally the oral amendment to get the bill in the shape the author would like. Those in favor of its adoption signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Thank you, Representative Lunan, to your bill.
Members, this bill is actually very non-controversial. It allows insurance carriers to collect restitution costs for investigations when they've found someone to commit fraud. It also requires carriers to report to the commissioner when they're being fined by another state, and allows licensed peace officers that work for the Commerce Department to execute warrants. Pretty straightforward. I ask for a green vote.
Thank you, Representative Lunan. Is there anybody who wants to speak for or against this bill? I have not heard of any opposition to it. Members, any questions for the author? Seeing none, the Representative Lunan renews his motion that House File 1443, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on Civil Law. Those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. The motion prevails. Thank you, members. Thank you, Representative Lunan.
Mr. Chairman, that was a minute and 46 seconds, by the way.
Representative Lunan, I'm glad you timed it. You can do better.
Representative Hoppe, would you like to move HF 1732 to civil law?
Madam Chair, I would like to move House File 1732 and recommend that it be re-referred to the Committee on Civil Law. Madam Chair, I also have a DE2 amendment that I would like to move.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. We'll go ahead and vote on the DE2 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. All right, the bill is in the shape that the author would like it. Go ahead, Chair.
Madam Chair, I appreciate the committee's time, and in the interest of time, since we're nearing 5 o'clock, I will turn it immediately over to the expert testifiers. I will say one thing. Mr. Brickwoody is going to come down, as is the case with most of these bills in the last few days. Still a work in progress, and I very much appreciate Mr. Brickwoody's cooperation and work on this bill. With that, I'll turn it over to the lovely and talented Ms. Rowan. Madam Chair, I'd like to turn this over to the lovely and talented Bob Johnson.
Welcome to the committee. Identify yourself to the record and then please proceed with your testimony.
Madam Chair, let the tape reflect the fact that the lovely and talented Bob Johnson is blushing.
Actually, my body temperature is. Madam Chair and committee members, Bob Johnson, Insurance Federation of Minnesota. In light of the time, I'm going to be very brief and just make a couple of comments, and then Ms. Rowan will go through the bill with a little more detail, but maybe three important points. This is a collaborative effort. You have the two heads of the Property Casualty Trade Group and the Life Insurance Trade Group working collaboratively on a very significant issue, some regulatory reform. This is the Commerce and Regulatory Reform Committee. Through the years, you do this regularly and in significant areas in terms of solvency regulation, claim settlement, a number of areas of law that we have many, many detailed statutes. Those statutes include the duties and responsibilities of the Commerce Commissioner and the Department. And in recent years, we have seen some specific problems in the area of market conduct examinations. That's why this bill is here. And these problems are dealt with in the bill, and the problems relate to there's some best practices that we're not following in this state that we're seeing in other states that the National Association of Insurance Commissioners has identified, and frankly we need some statutory reform to get this area of law on a better track. I'll end with Madam Chair and committee members that we have had significant meetings and vetting of this bill language, all of it, with the Commerce Department and the senior team, every word of it we've walked through. So just so the committee knows, there's nothing surprising, and we've really distilled down the remaining issues to very few as it comes before the committee. So with that, Madam Chair and committee members, I'll turn it over to Ms. Rowan.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Robin Rowan. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Insurance and Financial Services Council. I have to say that when we first, over the years, our member companies, both Bob's and mine, have had increasing concerns about the way market conduct exams or audits have been conducted. And we got together and put together a list of what we thought would be best practices to improve the efficiency of the exams, both for insurance companies, but also for the Department of Commerce as well. And I think when we first brought this to the Department of Commerce, we were expecting perhaps not the warmest reception. But to give the department credit, they've been working with us all along, and I think we're actually a lot closer to resolving this than I ever thought that we would be. So, so I'm going to go through, I know folks are in a hurry, so I'm going to go through the provisions of the bill. If anyone has any questions, do what you do. So the first part of the bill is that we have language requiring the department to hold a scheduling conference with the company that they are going to examine. And this is very important because this way the company knows, A, why they're being examined, what the department is looking at, what the proposed budget for the exam is, what kind of documents they might need, and it works for both the companies and the department because oftentimes the department doesn't know what the company has or what their systems are like, and by getting everyone together at the table, similar to what we're doing with this bill, you end up with a much more efficient process. Another thing that this bill does is has to do with transparency and billing. Insurance companies pay for these exams. And we're happy to do that. However, they can be very expensive. I've seen monthly bills for $150,000. And unfortunately, right now, those bills aren't itemized. They're lump sums, so we don't know exactly how that money has been spent. So we're asking for the bills to be itemized, and that's something that the department agrees would be an improvement to the process. Another issue are the length of these audits. Currently, we have some exams that are on 5 years plus. So we have language, and this is one of the areas we're still working on the department with working with the department on. But we have language in the bill that basically says an exam should be 12 months unless the company isn't cooperating, or the commissioner can show that the exam needs to be longer. And in our view, that really encompasses, we're struggling to find something that doesn't encompass for the commissioner. If the company is dragging its feet, the 12 months doesn't apply. If the company is appealing frivolously, the 12 months wouldn't apply. If they're doing a multi-state exam where the department isn't necessarily in control, then that would be a good reason as to why the 12 months wouldn't apply. The last provision we want to talk about deals with accountability. Currently, if a company has concerns about how an exam is being conducted, or if we feel the department has exceeded their authority, we don't have any recourse. So what we've been working with the department on is to put a process in place where we can have an appeal and some recourse if we have concern. And so what we've worked jointly on the department with is taking language from another section of the code that creates an internal appeal within the Department of Commerce. So we would go to the commissioner and say, you know, we think this exam is out of line or this document request is out of line. And then the commissioner, in a relatively short period of time, would turn around and say, obviously, yes or no. The process that we agreed upon also allows that to be appealed to an ALJ. Where we have outstanding disagreements is that we want the ALJ's opinion to be binding on the department and not just advisory. And our view is that if it's just advisory, I mean, the whole thing is kind of a waste of time and resources, really. I mean, if the commissioner says, no, we think we're doing this right, and we appeal it to the ALJ, and the ALJ says, no, we don't think you're doing it right, then the commissioner doesn't have to abide by that decision. It doesn't make any sense. Under Chapter 14, of course, both the commissioner and the insurance company would have the ability to appeal it to stick to the State Court of Appeals. So that's where we are. Again, you know, we are very pleased with how this conversation has gone with the department, and we think this will be a very good bill for streamlining the exam process.
Thank you, Mr. Rowan. Good afternoon, Mr. Brickwitty. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Madam Chairman, Peter Brickwitty, Assistant Commissioner from the Commerce Department. I will attempt to be brief. I would echo Ms. Rowan and Mr. Johnson's comments about the work that we have done. The Commerce Department did have significant concerns with the bill as introduced. And we have made tremendous progress, I think, in a positive direction with the A2 amendment. As Ms. Rowan indicated, we don't have full agreement on all of the issues. Ms. Rowan highlighted the two major ones that remain outstanding. I would concur that we have some concerns about guaranteeing that every exam be able to fit into a 12-month time frame, because there are certainly circumstances that may cause one to go longer than that. As Ron mentioned, that sometimes they can take multiple years. That certainly tends to be the exception to the rule, but we also can understand and appreciate the company's need for some more certainty and a more targeted process in terms of what to expect in the outset. So we are continuing to work through that issue to see if we can find the right language to thread that needle. Also, as Ms. Rowan indicated, we do have some concern with the finality of the order from the administrative law judge, because that is a deviation from the current process under Chapter 14, so we will continue to work through that. There are, I think, a couple of technical issues elsewhere throughout the bill, but in the interest of time, Madam Chair, I'd simply summarize by saying that I do appreciate Mr. Johnson and Mr. Rowan's comments about market conduct exams being an important part of the regulatory process. We do feel that they provide significant benefit to policyholders and to other companies to make sure that insurance companies are treating the public fairly, and that the public can trust that companies are fulfilling their obligations to policyholders and claimants. It is a tool that's used across the country by all state insurance regulators, and so the concept of aligning with best practices across the country is a good one, and we have been working in good faith with the industry to see if we can arrive at a bill that we can support. We're not 100% there, but we've made a lot of progress over the last several weeks, and appreciate the committee's time. Happy to answer questions.
Okay. Chair Hoppe.
Madam Chair and members, we're kind of rushing on this bill, and it's a little bit after 5, and people, I hope we're going to get done shortly, and people can go to caucuses if they so choose. We, you know, it's an important bill, and we wouldn't have done it if it were more controversial, but as you could hear from everybody that testified, again, it's still a work in progress, and I think we're pretty close. This way we can be done now. We don't have to come back at 7 o'clock or something, and people can do what they will with their evening. And I appreciate, Madam Chair, your and the committee's indulgence, and we would be happy to stand for questions.
Members, are there any questions? Thank you. Seeing none, I just want to say thank you, Chair Hoppe, for bringing this bill forward. And given the late hour, I'm not going to belabor this, but I've had a lot of serious concerns, specifically regarding recent developments, and I think this bill does address some of these issues. So thank you very much. And with that, would you like to make your motion to re-refer?
Madam Chair, I will renew my motion that House File 1732, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on Civil Law, and I would appreciate member support.
Thank you. All those in favor of House File 1732 being re-referred to Civil Law, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. And with that, members, we are adjourned.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.